Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Ed Kalenge. My next guest is a legendary figure in the world of music. As a guitarist, songwriter, performer, and producer, he has sold over 40 million records. Hits with the Guess Who include These Eyes and American Woman. Hits with Bachman Turner Overdrive include Taking Care of Business and You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet. On April 14th, under the moniker Bachman, he will unveil his debut album, Heavy Blues. It is a pleasure to say hello to Randy Bachman, who is joining us from London, England. Randy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ed. Nice to be on your show.
It is terrific to have you. I appreciate your time. Heavy Blues, it's an album inspired by a love of classic 60s rock blues. Now, I've read the project had its beginnings from a conversation between you and Neil Young. Tell me how it all came about.
Well, I was being inducted into the National Musicians Hall of Fame in January of 2014, along with Peter Frampton and Duane Eddy and Buddy Guy and Stevie Ray Vaughan, a lot of really cool guys. And Neil Young was there because his pedal steel player, Ben Keith, was also inducted. And I said, Neil, guess what? I got offered a record deal. And he looked at me and he said, don't do the same old thing and say it's brand new. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, we who produce and write ourselves, we just keep doing the same thing. Stop what you're doing, get new guitars, get a new band, write some new songs, get a new producer. Don't produce yourself because you'll do the same thing and think you're great. And he said, I even got a producer. He got Daniel Lanois on his last album, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I got Kevin Shirley, a friend of mine. I saw a really great female drummer. I was watching Tommy, and I was sitting with Pete Townsend. We thought the drummer was amazing. We went backstage. The drummer was a lady named Gail Ann Brenda, and I said, wow, you play like Keith Moon. I want you to do an album with me. And I found a bass player, another lady, who actually played like John Entwistle and wore a John Entwistle t-shirt on stage. And I said, wow, if I can have these two chicks that play like Keith Moon and John Entwistle, I want to do the British blues invasion of the late 60s. Because to me, growing up, there were three big invasions, the Elvis and all the guys that came with Elvis, you know,
right.
Gene Vincent and Eddie Cochran. And then there was the Beatles. And everything that came with the Beatles and Stones, you know, the Searchers, the Seekers, and everything. And then there was the guitar trios of Hendrix, Cream, Led Zeppelin, and The Who. And I wanted to go to that because it was such a great era for guitar players. There was such freedom. You could crank up your guitar and distort and play all blues licks and yell and scream over it. Radio was changing from pop music into playing long, extended power kind of stuff. And I thought, well, I'm not going to get any airplane unless I might as well have fun. And we had so much fun. Now the response is getting really good from radio. I think I might even get some airplay. I don't know.
You know, I've heard the title track. You and Peter Frampton are both downright incredible on guitar. Now, the sound is incredibly contemporary, but you can tell the fiber and fabric of the 60s blues front and center. How difficult is it to pay homage to a certain type of music while blending in a contemporary sound?
Well, I went and got all old guitars, Supros and Dan Electros, that have different amount of frets, different scale lengths. I use different strings. I got old amplifiers to get that old sound. Dale and Brendan brought old drums with actually skins on. You know, drum heads now are like plastic. She actually brought skinned heads, like made out of animal skins that have this pounding sound like Keith Moon used to have. And then we just went into a room and jammed it. We had old basses and old amps, and we tried to get an old sound. So when you hear Heavy Blues, you can hear behind it is oldish kind of stuff, but when Frampton plays his solo, he's playing on, you know, on an old Les Paul, a 1954 Les Paul, but it's got a little bit more bite, a little bit more contemporary, and because we're all modern musicians and still playing, I mean, I met Frampton, again, is when I asked him to play in the album. I was asked to play with the Frampton Guitar Circus at the Hollywood Bowl last August. So I went and did that with Peter, and also on the show was Robert Randolph. At the same time, I asked Robert Randolph, and then he played on the track Oh My Lord. So we're all kind of still contemporary players, but we were honoring these old grooves. And I was writing new songs to fit in the old grooves. I wanted to record old songs, and my producer wouldn't let me. He said, you're a great songwriter. Take an old song, rewrite it, write your own lyrics, honor the groove and honor the people who played it. So if you play the whole album, you'll find that one song sounds a bit like The Who. One sounds a bit like Hendrix. One sounds a bit like Zeppelin. One sounds a bit like Cream. And we try to honor that kind of feel. One sounds like the James Gang, you know, the later on kind of tree.
Right.
So we try to honor that kind of feel, and I think we did. It was a lot of fun.
You know, when you have such an impressive guest list of contributors on this album as you do, that has to be so exciting to the creative process to have all this talent in one project and one time. And you said you guys just got together and jammed. That's got to be such an incredible feeling.
Well, it was. What was incredible is We cut the 12 songs in 5 days. The producer, Kevin Shirley, wouldn't let me have a copy. He took all the stuff with him. And so I wrote it, and we recorded so fast, we were kind of in the dark as to what it was going to sound like. And he went to Australia to produce another couple of bands. And then he called me up and he said, I've got a friend of mine, Joe Bonamassa, to play on a track. And I said, wow, great idea. I'm going to call Christy Healy and see if I can get a track I did with Jeff Healy before he passed away and put it on there. And then suddenly we start to ask other guitar players. And I never heard the stuff until Kevin Shirley did a rough mix and sent it to me. And then I would listen to it and hear it with Neil Young on it. I'd hear one with Luke Doucette and one with Scott Holiday. And as a guitar player, I was blown away by what these guys brought to the album. And now if you buy my album, you can go and get the 7 songs without the solos as a free download. Mm-hmm. And when you come to play a city near you or your city, wherever you are, you can download the song without the solo. You can play the solo just like the voice on TV. Doesn't matter if you're 7 or 17 or 70. You play the solo. You YouTube it. You send it in to me or the presenting radio station. If you play the winning solo, you come and join me on stage. You get an Epiphone Les Paul guitar. And you play that song with me on stage, and you play Taking Care of Business as the encore, and you're a guitar hero for 10 minutes.
That is incredibly cool. And, you know, isn't that something about how, Randy, the way music is distributed now, how you can do things like that that you really couldn't do before? The way music is distributed is so much different, but it allows opportunities such as this that were really never there before.
No, it's very amazing that this album was done, and I was not there when these guys were playing the guitar solos.
Wow.
They were in a tour bus somewhere, they were in a hotel room in Australia, they were in their own basement, and they did it, they put it up in this cloud in the sky, and I get the solo the next day, and it's absolutely amazing, because it wouldn't have been possible without this technology, because you can't travel around the world and get guys, there's no recording studios anymore, they're everywhere, they're in everybody's basement, so everything's really done a big flip around in the last 5 years.
You know, you've had such an amazing career. I've always wondered about this. Back in 1970, the Guess Who, at that point, had sold more records than the entire Canadian record industry, even outselling the Beatles that year. But you leave the Guess Who, you go on, you find Brave Belt, which morphs into Bachman-Turner Overdrive. Why did you leave the Guess Who at the height of its popularity back in 70?
I had to go to the hospital for 3 months. I had a gallbladder issue, and if anybody out there has ever had kidney stones or gallstones, you will know what I knew, and that's the true meaning of pain.
Wow.
And so we had hit number one with American Woman album and single. We went from making $5,750 a night to $10,000 and $12,000 a night, and it was time for the band to make some money, and I had to go into the hospital. I mean, I was every night having an attack and bleeding and in incredible pain. And I had been with the band at that point 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
I took 3 and 4 months out. The band stayed on the road without me. They got a couple of replacements. And then when I was better, they just kept going. So I had no choice but to start another band, which was kind of a country rock thing, Brave Bell. And we evolved and evolved and evolved, and it became Bachman-Turner Overdrive.
And so you were a part of two of the most iconic bands of the 70s. I mean, with such distinctive sounds and music. It's amazing how your music has lived on. I mean, in television commercials. You had Lenny Kravitz perform American Woman. You've heard your music in so many different TV shows and movies. It's amazing that your art can live on for decades and decades.
Nobody's more amazed than I am. I never thought as a teenage kid, jamming these songs out in a room with Burton Cummings or with Fred Turner, that they would live on and live on like 10, 20, 30, 40 years later, and I'm very grateful for that. I have a great life.
You certainly do. Once again, Bachman's debut album, Heavy Blues, will be released worldwide April 14th, but if you pre-order the album from iTunes or Amazon MP3, which you can do now, you will receive the title track, Heavy Blues, featuring Peter Frampton, and the first single, The Edge, immediately upon ordering. Randy Bachman, best of luck with the new project, and thank you so much for joining us here on America Weekend.
Ed, thank you, bye.
What a nice guy. I wish him all the best with his new album. And what a lineup. Talk about assembling talent for this new venture. Again, the name of the new group is Bachman, and I've heard the title track, and it is really good. And if you are a fan of guitar rock, he and Peter Frampton go toe-to-toe. It's just, it's a great record. Can you call it a record anymore? I don't know, but it's a great record. Stay with us. Lots more coming up this hour. We'll talk about some inexpensive spring break destinations, and then the Entertainment Report with Christina Staffo, followed by why kids think Facebook is lame. And as we go out to break, this is one of my favorite Randy Bachman songs from the Guess Who, These Eyes. Now this is music. I'm Ed Kalenge, and this is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Network.
This is attorney Jay Coleman with The Final Verdict. Over the last few years, Becky has become disabled. Recently, she decided it would be wise to add her sister to her checking account so her bills could be paid if the condition worsened. Unfortunately, that's exactly what happened. Luckily, though, the sister was there to pay the bills and take care of Becky until she suddenly passed away. But now, Becky's sister has decided to buy herself a brand new car with the money in the checking account. Legally, can she do this? Stay tuned for the final verdict.
Order in the court!
Becky and her sister were both listed as owners of the checking account. So, the surviving owner, the sister, is entitled to use the funds in the account in any way she wants. And that's the final verdict.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. Expense statements, tax returns, well, it's human nature, but some of them are going to be fakes fabricated to bring maximal return to the creator. But is there a way to spot a fake expense statement or tax return? Here's the science of it. Of course, it goes without saying, honesty is the best policy. Make sure the receipts match the numbers. But every now and then, it's necessary to recreate documentation that has been lost. People who have a tendency to fake expense statements use dollar figures with way too many threes and seven. What's the cheap psychological trick? Well, to determine fakes, mathematicians look for excessive use of repeated numbers. To avoid the problem, go for honesty and count your sevens and threes before you turn it in. Questions? Contact me at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MYTV.